This is T. Randolph again, and today we're going to have a beautiful conversation with one of my dear friends, Lena Graff. Lena is with me today. We're sitting in her beautiful home here in California. The birds are chirping, the dogs are roaming. It's just a beautiful day, and I'm so excited to have her here with me. We're going to be discussing things of and concerning relationships with people. I've known Lena for probably 20 plus years, and I have a great respect for her because I have seen her love people where they are, invite people into her home, into her life, even when they're messy. My wife has a phrase that she has taught me, which is people are messy, love them anyway. And it sounds very simple to do, but in life it can be difficult sometimes when you do have situations that cause you concern or anxiety or whatever that might be. But I will tell all of you who are listening, Lena is someone who I have spoken to at times in my life where I was in great turmoil, great difficulty, times where my life was upside down. And she and her husband, Phil, came beside myself and my wife and loved on us. And that love translated into legitimate concern, help, encouragement, and a lot of wisdom about how to do life. I'm still on my journey, as you all know, if you've listened to my earlier podcast. This show is about the journey of life. And my hope today with this conversation with Lena Graff is to help you, the listener, better understand what the journey can be if we're open to hearing what others have learned along the way. So let me introduce Lena. Lena, thank you for joining me today.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
I'd like to know a little bit about you before we get started. If you could tell me what you're currently doing today, some of the history of you and your husband, Phil, some of the travels you've had. I will say to the listeners, Lena and her husband, Phil, have been in Europe. They've been here in the United States and elsewhere. So tell us a little bit, Lena, about your past and what you have learned, at least along the way, regarding some of your own personal history.
Well, it's kind of hard to know where to start. I probably would start with a little bit of my family of origin. I grew up, I'm the oldest of six kids, and my dad is a wild adventurer. And we moved around to lots of different countries when I was growing up. And then I ended up meeting my husband in Amsterdam. This year, it'll be 25 years ago. And we met in Amsterdam, came back, got married, had five kids, lived here for a while, then moved back to Amsterdam and spent another 6 years in Europe, in primarily Portugal and Holland, and traveled a lot. And now we're back home in the United States. I consider California really our home. And we do a variety of things. So we are involved in leadership development, church planting, and I'm a caterer by trade. So that's kind of my artistry or my craft or my passion. But aside from that, people are really my passion. So it's kind of hard to know how to describe it succinctly.
Well, let's talk about that for a moment when you say people are your passion. As you've traveled throughout the world, you've been to Europe, United States, a lot of places. I know your husband goes to Africa quite a bit. Are people really all that different, irrespective of where they live?
I think people are kind of, they're each unique, and that's what fascinates me, is everybody's got their own story, but so much of the core of who we are is the same across the world. I mean, the same needs, the same motivations, the same longings, the same desire to connect and to be significant and have meaningful relationships and to have a purpose greater than themselves. And no matter where you travel, you run into the same issues. Just sometimes they have a different cultural context. They might look different on the surface, but at the core, they're really the same.
In your interrelationships that you have with people, I know you put on various relationship seminars, if you will, here in California. And when you put on those relationship seminars, what is it, if you could distill into one or two points, what would be those one or two points that you hope people who come to those relationship events take away? What's the takeaway for them?
Well, first, I put these relationship retreats on primarily because I need them. So I don't put them on because we've got the answers. We put them on because I've been working with brides and grooms for a long time, and they come to me to put on the best party they've ever had. But I realize that they don't really know what they're walking into, and that Hollywood has lied to people and told them that, you know, you find the right person and you live happily ever after the rest of your life. And if you look around, nobody's living happily ever after. So I've kind of seen this need for people to have a sense of the reality of relationships and the hope for intimacy and healthy relationships, which we all long for, but none of us have a clue how to get. So I would say that at the end of these retreats, what I hope for people is that they would walk away with a sense of hope and a sense of the fact that relationships are a little bit messy and they're supposed to be, and that's okay. Instead of, you know, this disillusionment that because they're not happy, they should get out. So my desire is to keep people in relationship and kind of slogging through the difficulty of it so that they can find intimacy and be known and really grow to wholeness.
When you said a lot there. I'm going to break down some of what you're saying because I find it fascinating. Part of what this whole show is about, it's my personal belief that, and not to be too hard on the media does its thing and then they have the right to do what they feel they want to do. But my sense is that the media, television and radio and magazines and the internet now, really has the idea that we have to aspire to be a celebrity. We have to aspire to be a professional athlete. We have to aspire to be a model. We have to be a rich and wealthy and famous. And I think what happens to adolescents and adults and people who are married, we have this idea that that's what life is really all about, or that is what in fact happens in real life. And what I want to ask you, Lena, is when you interact with people at these relationship events or when you're in your ministry talking with people, what do you see happening in real life? What are what are the urgent needs that people have that are either not being addressed, or if they are addressed, they're being addressed in a way that is not healthy? What would you say are the urgent needs that people have in life?
That's a really complex question. I'd rather start it from the sense that I think what you're talking about in terms of fame, and I think what we've sold people is something that's not true, that doesn't meet our needs, you know, that the desire to be famous, somehow they're going to get this sense of belonging and being known. I think the needs that they really have are to be connected to one another, to be in loving relationships. And I think often our media has said that to get that, you've got to be all these perfect, beautiful, model, famous things. And I've worked in Hollywood for a long time, and I haven't known very many celebrities that are really truly fulfilled and happy. And I've never desired to be like them, like to come home to my scrappy kids and my scrappy house has been a much richer experience for me. And to be involved with real people who are on a journey of real life and that don't pretend to have it all together, but in an authentic way, desire to connect and to grow together. Maybe some of the real needs we have are to be known and to be significant in relationships, not significant in fame and prominence, but to be significantly connected to people, to have a sense of value and belonging. And you don't get that message very often, do you?
No, you don't. And you know, the question that I have too for you is, how do we get that sense of belonging? How do we get that sense of intimate, deep relationship?
Well, I'm just going to tell you a little story of just some observations I had while we were living in Portugal. We lived in a really interesting community that had rich and poor right next to each other. And Portugal's a little bit undiscovered, undeveloped. It's rugged. It's one of the poorer European cities. There's a beauty and a grace about it and a humility about the people. But years ago, a lot of the royalty would go and build castles and would have land in Portugal. So I noticed that where we lived near these royal palaces, and we got to know some very noble people, people who had inherited land, some of the highest royal titles still left in Portugal. And then we live right next to really, really poor people who were missing all their teeth and, you know, wore these cute little aprons and had postage stamp gardens and really had nothing. And it was fascinating to be sandwiched in between wealthy and poor. And I have to say the poor people were, there was a contentedness about them. And they needed each other. And there was something about their humility that they had and their need for one another that allowed them to connect with each other. There weren't these pretenses. They didn't pretend to have it all together. And whereas the wealthy people that we were involved with, and we had many events where they were all in our house at the same time, the wealthy people didn't know how to engage, didn't know how to connect. They had surrounded themselves with people that told them what they wanted to hear about themselves. Consequently, I don't think they really had a sense of being known or of needing somebody or being needed. There's, when you're involved in each other's lives in a pretty down-to-earth level, you sort of need one another. And when the pretenses fall off, there's a sense of community that adds depth and richness to your life and a sense of significance. And I think in our wealthier American societies, we're losing that. We're losing the ability to really need one another and thereby be known and have a value outside of just our little lives.
When people here in our country interact with each other today, are there things that you're seeing that you feel inhibit healthy relationships or healthy interaction between people?
Well, I think just the fact that we don't need each other. You know, we used to be women that would do laundry at the river and men that would work each other's gardens or, you know, farms. And now we've got either people or machines to do everything. We don't need each other. We go into our houses and with an electric garage door opener and comes closing down and we turn on the television. And there's not a sense of humanity and of human interaction. And we're sort of ashamed if something in our family isn't completely right. And if we don't know how to keep our kids, healthy. And we somehow feel like we've got to be super moms and super dads and have everything figured out. And as I've traveled the world, I don't think anybody in humanity has it figured out. So I think we tend to kind of hide the fact that our lives are a little bit messy.
You know, in attending some of your events, some of the things that have really struck me quite personally is the idea that intuitively we know we need relationship, but something happens to us along the journey, sometimes in childhood, like with me, sometimes in adulthood, that interferes with that notion that I need to be in relationship with others. Some of the things personally that I've experienced is the idea that, you know, I've been traumatized. I've been hurt. I've been emotionally damaged. I have all this mental baggage. So how in the world can I have a relationship with someone when I can't even deal with the relationship I may have with myself and my own mind? Mm-hmm. And so I think there's a sense with a lot of people, which is, you know, until I learn to love myself, how can I be expected to love somebody else? What would you say to that type of a question? Meaning, I can't love someone else until I learn to love myself. Well, how would you address that?
Well, I think there's some truth to that, but learning to love yourself can be really complicated. And I know in my own life, there was years where I really wrestled with a lot of shame and a lot of sense of depression and loving myself. I couldn't just generate love for myself. I think I needed, you know, some healing in my own life. And for me, that came when I really began to understand the grace of God and realized that life wasn't just about me, that there was something much bigger at stake than just me, but that the God of this universe loved me. And that was, that sounds sort of simple, but for me, it was transformative because I was carrying around so much shame for who I wasn't and who I longed to be, but couldn't quite get to. And for me to know that the God that created me knew me and loved me just the way I was, it began a slow healing process. And I don't think anybody grows up in this world unscathed. And our ability to trust people and even trust ourselves has been deeply damaged. And being in relationship exposes you. And so we tend to stay out of relationship because it exposes where we're not completely well or whole. But to stay out of relationship prevents us from really learning intimacy, which is what we really long for. So you've got to risk being exposed to find the intimacy, to be loved for who you are. And I think that's what we all really crave.
You know, in my own journey, even continuing today, the notion that I can find love, and once I find that love, take it and give it away. That's a concept that for me was revolutionary in my own life. The other concept was the idea that there's a spiritual side to being in relationship with other people, being in relationship with God, of course. And the idea that spiritual health can be achieved by sharing with others, giving to others, making yourself available to others. Sometimes doing the hard thing, which is, I really don't have time to listen to you right now, but I will. I don't really have time to bring food over to your house right now, but I will. I really don't have time right now to do an interview with you, Randy, because I have my dogs going to the pound, but I will. And she's laughing because that's a true thing I just said. But the idea is, and I actually was thinking about this last year, which the profound moment for me was that I felt that the God of the universe was saying to me, Randy, you want to have a healthy spirit? Then give it away. Mm-hmm. You want to have a healthy mental attitude? Then help others. You want to get out of depression? Go out there and get involved for the betterment mm-hmm. of something or someone outside of yourself. Mm-hmm. So, Lane, I want to ask you, I'd like to know what you think of those thoughts. And have you seen that spiritual truth in action? And if you have, how did that impact your life?
That, to me, Randy, that's one of the most incredible parts of life is watching people who give their lives away. They're the happiest, most fulfilled. They may be tired, you know, but I hope that both Phil and I at the end of our lives are die tired. And I don't mean like compulsively working, but die giving it away, because I feel like God has been so generous with us just as people, to bring rich people, and not riches in money, but riches in life, people around us, and to give us a passionate desire to see people come alive and find wholeness. And to me, there's nothing more exciting than to see somebody in their story and to watch their story grow in wellness and wholeness and life, and see them kind of discover joy and purpose and meaning, and even discover the fact that God might love them. And, you know, to be connected in significant relationships that give them a sense of hope that alone you don't have.
I want to focus on that word hope. In my own life, and my wife, I have to give her all the credit for this because she gets it. It's not something that I intuitively understood. There was a time in my life with my wife where we had very difficult times. Mm-hmm. And we almost got divorced a couple times. And I can remember my wife saying, I need to know that there's hope. Mm-hmm. I need to know that at the end of this period, whatever it is that we're in, there's hope. Not necessarily happiness, not necessarily contentment, not necessarily material wealth, but hope. hope for a better relationship, hope for a better understanding of what this life's really all about. And I think for the listeners out there, this is something that you will hear repeatedly in our program, that there is hope, and ultimately there can be joy, even in the midst of trials and tribulations. And in this journey of life, so much of the time, the media, outside influences, the culture, people close to us, many times tell us there is no hope. Or if you do have hope, it's conditional. I'll give you love if. I'll give you love when. I'll give you love if you do X, Y, and Z. And hope, in many respects, is freedom to know. Like you said earlier, God accepts me and loves me where I am right now today. Mm-hmm. I don't need to do anything more than just be who I am. He still loves me. Mm-hmm. Hope in knowing that what I do today matters, and that if I am willing to take that risk, which you talked about earlier, that maybe that risk will help me to understand what hope is about. Lena, do you have any, if you're open to doing this, do you have any personal stories that you could share with us where you have seen hope in action, mm-hmm. grace in action, love in action in your own life, and how that impacted you and your family?
Well, I can tell you about some times where I haven't had hope.
Well, let's talk about that.
You know, I think just, you know, more fairly recent story is we moved over to Amsterdam and entered into about a 4-year, maybe 5-6 year, really dark season for our whole family. And, you know, there were moments where I just thought, have we made a mistake? Have we made a wrong decision? Everything that could go wrong in our life was going wrong. And we had a lot of people criticizing the decision we had made. And so I, of course, thought they were all right and that I was a fool. And there could be a lot of truth to that. But I remember crying out, you know, really screaming at God. And I felt pretty, you know, sacrilegious doing so. But at the end of sort of this desperate cry to God, I just felt like he said to me, thank you for telling me, because I already knew you felt that way. And it was this journey of allowing people and God into some of the darkness in my own soul, where I felt really alone and really ashamed to just be even struggling with a sense of despair or depression, or that why is everything I'm touching breaking, not working out? And, you know, I mean, kids' health and finances and just emotionally and conflict in leadership and in our job situation. It was just, there wasn't anything. It seemed like every direction I turned was complicated and too complex for me to figure out. I didn't have the answers. And, you know, I look back now on some of that season and I just feel like God was building a strength and a resiliency in me and an ability to trust that my life was about something bigger than my immediate circumstances. That hope came in trusting that this moment that I was in was not the whole of my life. And that if I could develop a degree of trusting God, and that there would develop a resiliency that was beyond my circumstances, and if I had the sense that my life was bigger than that moment, then I could pick up and just keep going, and I could keep giving to other people, even when I was feeling pretty blue myself. And I'll tell you, that was some of the key for me, was to get up and keep serving and to get up and look at other people whose lives were far more broken than mine. And while I might feel like I was suffering, my suffering pales in comparison with much of the world. If you travel, you see people in pretty desperate, oppressed situations, the likes of which most people in America know nothing about.
You were talking about being in this place during this 5 years, you said it was a dark place. What did God do? How did he speak to you to help you understand not only where you were, but where you were going? And what did he say to you that gave you hope?
Sometimes it was through other people. There were a few mentors in my life that would speak what they saw in me that I didn't see in myself. And they would speak the sense that they could see God working in me. Last night I was driving with my son, Branson. And ever since we moved back from Europe, he's had this longing for the wild that we experienced in Portugal that you don't have in Southern California. And I think his longings are God-given. You know, he's not satisfied to live in kind of suburbia California, but he longs for adventure. He longs for something bigger and more significant and more risky. And I could say to him last night, you know what, Branson, your longings are good. Don't deny them. God has a plan for you that to grace you with a life that will meet those longings. And it's not longing for stuff. Americans have plenty of stuff. It's longings for something that fulfills your soul. And I could confidently say to him last night, you know what, Branson? God put those longings in you. Feel every bit of it. But when he gives you one day, when he meets the longings of your heart, it will mean so much more when you've waited for it. And it's not the longing for immediate gratification. It's the longing to be significant. It's the longing to be part of a bigger adventure, to be a part of a purpose that's beyond your little world. And what I see in Southern California primarily is people living so much for themselves, so much for them having a neat and orderly life, getting the right house, you know, making the right impression, getting their kids in the right school. And, you know, I've rarely seen people who have everything orderly find true fulfillment. I think living life, trusting that it's about something much more than this, when you get that, and when you give your life away in that greater purpose, joy and hope are in the middle of that bigger sense.
You know, that's so well said, because I fit in the mold that you've talked about. I love having a nice home. I love having it nice and neat and tidy. I like having a nice car. All the things you just talked about. And the reality is, it never satisfies. You buy into the lie. You think it will satisfy, but it doesn't. It's an empty promise. Mm-hmm. And sometimes along the way, while you're enjoying that empty promise, it's like your body is decaying from the inside. Mm-hmm. Your mind is in bondage. And for some reason, you become owned by your possessions, mm-hmm, instead of you owning those possessions. And there's a tipping point, I think, that happens in life where you get to a place where you have the opportunity to say, I'm going to reject being owned by the things that I have. And in lieu of owning those things and having them own me, yes, I have them, but my life isn't defined by them. My life's not about them. My life is about the richer things, which you've talked about, which is relationships with people. But ultimately, isn't it more about the relationship with the God of the universe?
Well, I think that's what gives you the heart for people. I think out of God's love, we were created, and we were created to love. And love is so trite in today's society, and it's so it's without substance. But I think all of our interactions with each other are out of a kind of a spiritual quest to be connected and to be in loving relationships. And I don't mean the romantic kind of love. I mean the gritty, raw, I'm for you. I will journey with you. I will go to the ends. I will fight for you. Somebody said to me one time that one of the greatest things was to be a freedom fighter. And one of the things I long to be for people is a freedom fighter. Not so much freedom from just, you know, governmental rule, but freedom from the things that bind us on the inside. And one of the things I know about God is that he was a freedom fighter. And I love to read stories about Jesus, because he was so radical and so revolutionary and so different. We domesticate him and make him kind of within these nice church walls. We make him very tame and very normal. And I think if you read him in the context of the Jewish culture, he turned everything upside down. And history, by the way, has never been the same. So my desire is to see people know a radical, revolutionary, freedom-fighting God that gave it all away so that we could be connected to the greatest source of love that there is.
If a listener is out there right now and they're suffering from depression, suffering from anxiety, suffering from maybe a relationship that is either over or could be over, how does somebody in that type of situation go about resurrecting hope in their life? Resurrecting the notion and the idea it's going to be okay. Because I know in my own life, there have been times where God whispered in my ear, Randy, it will be okay. Just that simple statement, be still and know that I am God. That kind of encouragement. So how does somebody go about taking that first step out of depression? The first step out of hopelessness? What would you say to them today about that first step?
I think that sometimes just the loneliness is what adds to depression. And I think none of us really get out of depression by ourselves. I think we need to be involved in a greater community or context, or just, I would say one step is just to talk to somebody. And you know, that's a really, we are such, human beings are so complex, Randy. I mean, we've just got physiology and family of origin and context. I mean, there's just so many things that go into why somebody is hopeless or depressed. And I've walked through a lot of really ugly situations with people. And sometimes I've wondered, looking at people's situations, how they have hope. But to me, the recipe for finding hope is to let people walk alongside of you in that. And I don't think any of us were designed to be isolated. And for people who, if you know somebody who's isolated and full of anxiety, and, you know, just getting in the gutter with them. When we were in Portugal, there were so many things happened. This will sound crazy, but we had accidentally bought a house. It was all in Portuguese. We were signing a rental agreement, didn't know it was a purchase agreement, big fiasco. Our car got impounded. Our dog was in giving birth, and all 12 puppies died. And financially, we were hemorrhaging. And I had two sons that had back-to-back appendicitis and almost died because they became toxic. And so all that to say, I don't know that I was in a position with more stressors all at one time. And somebody called me, and I was feeling so like, is all of this my fault? Is everything that we've done because we're stupid? And the thoughts of just kind of shaming myself were overtaking my mind. And I had a mentor of mine call me, and he said, my wife and I are sitting in the kitchen reading your letter and just crying. And he said, don't try to make sense of it. Sometimes this world is just broken. And what he communicated to me was that there was no judgment, no shame, but that he was kind of in the stress and in the gutter with me, and he was just feeling it. And that was one of the most healing things somebody could have said to me, that rather than I should do all these things to fix my situation, that sometimes life is just hard and it doesn't make sense. The only way I know to make sense of it is that God loves us in the middle of it, and he doesn't leave us there. And he's the only one I know that can take our messy lives and bring redemption out of it, make something beautiful out of it, bring beauty out of the ugly. And I've seen that happen in my life over and over and over again. And sometimes I look and I think, how did I even have any friends when I look at the mess of my life, different seasons? But God didn't leave me stuck there. And the community of God didn't leave me stuck there. And I hope I don't leave people there. So when I am in relationship with people, lots of times people say, how can you love that person? And because I see such a future for them. I see that who they are now is not who they will be. The situation they're in now is not the end of their life. That there's God at work in something in them that he designed that is so beautiful, that who they will be one day will be so beautiful that I will be in awe. And I want to fight for that in the lives of people, because I think that's what Jesus does. I think he takes us where we're at and remakes us. He's done that for me. I look at my life and I think, I've been on a long journey, but who I was is not who I am. And I hope I don't stay where I'm at. But it's taken other people to believe that and have hope for me. So if you're in that stuck place, find somebody that will have hope for you and pick up and trust that God has you on a journey and he won't leave you here. This is not the end of your life. He's got a hope for you beyond what you could hope or imagine for yourself. By the way, that's all over the Bible, is messy people. There's not one healthy person or one healthy family system represented anywhere in Scripture. That's what I love about Jesus and the Bible, is he just takes raw humanity and he makes something beautiful out of it, which means there's hope for me.
You know, I just love what you said, and it kind of inspired me right now to say some things to people who are listening. If you are someone right now who's depressed, you're having anxiety, you can't get out of bed, you feel that you don't have any value, that's a lie. None of that is true. What the truth is God made you. You're a beautiful person inside and out. You can succeed. You can achieve what God designed for you from the beginning of time. And I want to just encourage you, if you're listening to this, to reach out to someone or some person or persons in faith and with confidence that they can walk the journey with you. There's so many times when we're hurting inside, we just don't want anybody to know. We're afraid that they're going to judge us, they're going to condemn us, they're going to reject us. And don't let that stop you from talking to somebody and telling them, maybe just as simple as, would you be my friend today? Would you go to lunch with me today? Would you just pray for me for a little bit? If that's all you do, it's a first step. And also, if you're listening and you're somebody who knows someone that has depression, has anxiety, is hurting, is in need of somebody to just listen for a moment, I want to encourage you, go do it. Don't wait for tomorrow. Don't wait until it's comfortable. Don't wait until you have enough money to do it. Just do it. And sometimes you will find in life that your quiet moment with that person, it could be at the grocery store, it could be jogging, it could be on the beach, it could be at work. That moment in time where you let somebody know you cared enough about them to just be there. Lena said something very profound. That couple who called her, they were just being there. Sometimes words can't soothe somebody. Sometimes you could give them the best wisdom you know, it's not going to have an impact. But what will have an impact is that you were available. And sometimes you just need to love somebody. That could just be simply putting an arm around them, walking with them, sitting with them, sharing with them. That will have more impact than sometimes we'll ever know. I'll also say this. I can remember when I was younger, I had a lot of trials and tribulations, and somebody told me, you should read this poem. It was called Footprints in the Sand. And they gave it to me, and I was kind of resentful when they gave it to me, because I felt like, you know, you're judging me, you're putting me down. And inside, I just was hurting, and I didn't even really know how to respond. And I read that poem. And really what the essence of the poem is you see a path, and there's footprints in the sand, and the person's complaining to God. Where were you when all this pain and suffering was occurring? Where were you when I was going through this trauma? And the God of the universe responds and says, I was carrying you. Those are my footprints. Those aren't yours. Well, I want to thank you so much for our time today. If you are a listener, I want you to know that Lena will be visiting with me from time to time. We're going to try to unpack some of the things we talked about today in some later episodes. I hope you enjoyed today. And thank you for your time, Lena.
You're welcome, Randy. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome.
For listening to T. Randolph and Friends. Please write to us or check out our website, blog, and conversations at trandolphandfriends.com. We would love to hear your thoughts on topics and guest ideas for future shows. We are Listening to Life.